सबको बड़े सम्मान के साथ प्रेम से हृदिक स्वागत. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And it's especially wonderful on Shivaratri. Shivaratri is a very special day for me because I met Baba on Shivaratri many years ago, more years ago than Devi Ma is claiming. And so I was introduced to yoga and Indian philosophy by the American yogi Ram Dass at a dinner party in Chicago in early 1970. And from that evening, I decided I wanted to go to India and find a guru. And about 6-8 months later, I was on my way. I found a great hatha yogi, and I studied with him in Kankal, Haridwar. But I knew that there was something more, and I hooked up with Ram Dass again, and he said, I'm going to meet the great Siddha, Baba Muktananda, in Delhi for Shivaratri. And would you like to meet him? I said, hell yeah. And so we had a bus for about 20-something seekers, and we went to Delhi, and I met Baba on Shivaratri, 1971. So it's always a very special night for me. And you know, I'm not a big fan of kitsch, but I do love Hindu kitsch. And among all the kitsches, Hindu kitsch is the best. And I was sent something for Shivaratri that I want to share with you from Anu, who's our host when we go to Ganeshpuri. She's the hotelier. So here's a little bit of Shivaratri kitsch for you.
Umapati Surguru Vande Jagatkaranam Vande Pannagbhushanam Mrigadharam Vande Pasunam Patim Vande Surya Shashank Vahani Nayanam Vande Mukundam Priyam Vande Bhakta Janasrayam Chavardam Vande Shivam Sankaram
Great, huh? Isn't that wonderful? So, this is Baba was asked, how can I get Lord Shiva's grace? And he said, it's not difficult to please Shiva. Anybody can please him. Anybody can cheat him even. That's what I love about Shiva. He said, no matter what condition you're in, whoever you are, he accepts you. All the other deities are snobs, and they only take certain very qualified people. But Shiva has to take all the rest, because they can't be left out. So Shiva takes all the dregs, all of us, the wretched, the poor, the huddled masses. And so it's great. And he's also called Bolo Shankar, which is Shankar the Fool, because he takes anybody, just anybody. So anybody can even cheat him. In this respect, Baba says, Baba's different from Shiva, he says. It's not so easy to cheat him. Baba was very difficult, except in some ways Baba's love was so great, he accepted everyone. But he was very clever also. But Shiva always protects his devotees. He doesn't let them fall. He's a very modern guru, is Shiva. His followers were ghosts and demons and strange beings. In one hymn, Shiva is called Lord of the Thieves. He doesn't despise anyone. He accepts everyone. So So in that spirit, in that great-hearted spirit, we celebrate Shaivism. And I was thinking, what will I do on Shivaratri? I thought very naturally I would make the theme Kashmir Shaivism. Because while I was in India, Baba introduced me to the philosophy of Kashmir Shaivism, which is a form of Advaita, an improved form of Advaita that he espoused. And so I thought I'd share some teachings from Kashmir Shaivism. And the first one is from a series of texts that I'm working on, going to put it together in a book one of these days, called Shaivism Says. It's similar to Notes from the Tea Shop, except it's not. So this says, Kashmir Shaivism says. Shaivism says that if you go deep into the interior of any part of the world and examine it more and more minutely, you will eventually come to consciousness itself. One of the sutras in Kashmir Shaivism says that the underlying principle of everything is not material, but consciousness itself. So wherever you look, if you go deep enough into it, you will find consciousness itself. It goes on. Thus, consciousness is known as the heart, because it is at the heart or center of all things and beings. This heart is consciousness, is the self of all. It is the clear space of good feeling. It's our very basic nature, in which both thought and feeling have their source and resting place. When you trace thought down to the highest and most pure thought, when you trace feeling down to the highest and most pure feeling, you come to the place of the self, the place of consciousness, and that's the place of Shiva. So with feeling, it's the space of love and the space of peace. And with thought, it's the place of wisdom and peacefulness and all-knowingness. If we get to that place, we come to what is Shiva, what is consciousness, which is the self. He says, the heart that is consciousness is the self of all. It is the clear space of good feeling. In a human being, thought and feeling show up as the thinking mind and the feeling heart. When the mind has an outward tendency, it can lose its connection to the source. It's very easy to go off on a mental trip, to get caught up in some story that you tell yourself and become miserable. When you tell yourself certain stories, it makes you miserable. This person doesn't like me, that person's not nice to me, this bad thing will happen, and we tell ourselves that, and we should notice that that makes us very unhappy. And so when the mind just gets caught up externally, we lose touch with the center. It then wanders in delusional creations, in fantasies, in dreams of triumph and domination, and in nightmares of horror and death. Does your mind tend to go into dreams of triumph and domination, or to nightmares of horror and death? Which tendency do you have? They're equally bad, but anyway, Shaivism says that the mind should always maintain an inward tendency. It should never lose contact with the heart. No matter how much you're thinking and thinking, it should always be aware of the inner, always connected with the inner. In Shiva process, this is the power of the A statement. When awareness focuses on the ground of feeling, and in so doing keeps the mind tethered to reality. Those of you know, many of you practice Shiva process, the method of self-inquiry, and the A statement is a statement where you just get in touch with present feeling. And it's a very wonderful thing to do, Just say, I feel angry, I feel sad, I feel happy, I feel agitated, I feel peaceful, I feel jealous, I feel confused. Whatever the feeling is, to get in touch with that feeling, because it grounds you in a certain reality. Well, if you just follow the mind, you'll be spinning off, creating universes. He goes on, Shaivism says that when one merges the mind with the heart of reality, all delusional mental constructs fade away, and everything is seen in its true nature as consciousness itself. The mind gives us great trouble when we turn outside and get lost in its meanderings. And that's why meditation is so important, to turn it within. Meditation is simply the act of turning the mind inward. And when we turn the mind inward, it quiets down. Eventually, it quiets down and we get in touch with something deeper. So I have a few notes from the tea shop on Kashmir Shaivism. We don't have the picture of the tea shop, do we? But we don't have to do it. No. I call these notes from the tea shop because when I was in Baba's ashram, I used to go after lunch, during the rest period, I'd go have a cup of chai next door in the chai shop. And there I would think about the yoga and so on. I couldn't think very well in the ashram because the shakti, the spiritual energy, was too much. And when it's too strong, your brain becomes paralyzed. And maybe it becomes too ecstatic or too miserable, as the case may be. But I'd go next door, have a cup of tea, and then I would contemplate. Sometimes I'd make notes. So these are some notes from the tea shop, but they're not notes from those days. This is called The Narrative of Kashmir Shaivism in Four Movements. And very often I give a talk on what's the essence of Kashmir Shaivism, the philosophy of Kashmir Shaivism. And I approach it this way. I talk about four steps in it. Oh, there you go.
Hang on. I'm struggling.
It's there.
It's small, though, isn't it?
It's small.
There
we are, sitting around the tea shop.
Yeah.
We're about to go out to do some work in the ashram. We're having a cup of chai. And there's a various cast of characters there. I could tell you who they all are. But I'm there. I was transported in by teleportation. Anyway. Okay, thanks. So this is... You know, I think that we tend to overcomplicate things, and that the essence of things is very simple indeed, and that we should try to get big picture about things, the essence of things. And the essence of Kashmir Shaivism is very simple. It's the story of consciousness. Consciousness contracting and then returning to its original quality. So this is the four movements. First movement is called chitti, or consciousness, pure consciousness, pure awareness, impersonal awareness. And the second is called mala, or contraction. For whatever reason, consciousness contracts and becomes an individual. And then the third movement, after hanging around for a long time as individuals and suffering individuals, we learn about the spiritual path, and then we make effort to return to our true nature. So the third movement is called upaya, or method, or sadhana, spiritual practice, upliftment. And that's what we're all doing. We learn to meditate, we learn to inquire, we seek for the truth within ourselves. And finally, the fourth movement is moksha, or enlightenment, self-realization. After we practice for a long time, we return to consciousness. So it's very simple. It's consciousness goes through a contraction and returns back to itself. That's the whole story of Kashmir Shaivism. And it, I believe it's each of our stories. Each of our stories. The note says, it begins with universal consciousness, which is one and complete in itself. It then passes through a reducing valve, contraction, in which separate individual souls appear. And all the philosophies and religions account for this. It's like the in the Garden of Eden, eating the apple. Is you know, in Eden, people are in a very expanded, blissful state. Then they eat the apple, the knowledge of good and evil, where ego sets in, and then it becomes contracted. And the third phase occurs when these individuals make effort to recover their true nature, sadhana. I call sadhana second education. We have one education which is practical, and we go to school and we learn different things, but those schools never teach us about sadhana or knowing who we are, learning who we are, learning about our true nature. This is a different kind of school that's necessary. And the fourth phase is to return to consciousness, realization. So that's Kashmir Shaivism essentialized and in a nutshell. Okay, tell me when to stop. Are you okay? You ready for the next one? This is about, the next one's about the contraction, why it contracts. And Shaivism says there are three contractions that take place. The contraction in the navel, the contraction in the heart, and the contraction in the third eye. The contraction in the navel is called karma mala. It makes, it creates the physical body. The contraction in the heart is called anava mala. It creates the emotional body. And the contraction in the head is called maya mala. It creates the mental body, the mind. So the mind, the heart, and the body are created by these three contractions. And the comment goes this way. The ancient yogis defined three knots or grantis at three levels of being. When I was studying Hatha Yoga, we learned about these grantis, these knots that have to be overcome in order to attain the self. These are the malas described in Kashmir Shaivism. The malas become the physical body, the emotional body, and the mental body. They're contractions of universal consciousness. So we're in this predicament where we have our emotions which are constricted. The original emotion is pure love, but instead we suffer. And our minds are constricted. The original mind is pure wisdom, pure expanse, pure light, but we just have a very dim light. And then the third mala is contraction of action. We're in a body, so we can only do certain things. Even if we're very talented, we're Olympic gymnasts, or great athletes, we still can't jump over the moon. So we're constricted in that way. And then through inner practice, we can overcome these malas. Let's see. I've got three more. I don't know if you can do three more. You think you can do two? You still? You're okay. This one's called the inner world and the outer world. The essence. This is another essence of Kashmir Shaivism. Another way to look at it. So consciousness itself shines. That's called prakasha. It's the shining. It just is. It shines and illumines everything. You know, everyone is so bright in here because you shine with the light of consciousness, the light of awareness. Extraordinary light. It illumines your whole life. But consciousness also has another ability, which is that it can turn inward and reflect on itself. Everyone has the power to know I am, and so on. Sometimes we pervert that and we think, oh, I'm no good or nobody likes me or things like that. Those are wrong use of this, what's called vimarsha. Prakasha is the shining and vimarsha is the self-reflection. So your own awareness can turn in on itself and examine itself. And because of that, consciousness decides to manifest itself, and this creates two worlds, the inner world and the outer world. The world we perceive out here, and then the world we see in here. This is very key. Every one of us has it, so we don't think about it. And when we look outside, we see the world, but then when we look inside, there's another world inside of ourselves that nobody else can contact except us. It's our private world. But this is the way consciousness is, an external world and an internal world. The inner world is Shiva, and the outer world is Shakti. And Shakti is the path back to Shiva. That if we understand the outer world properly, it can lead us back to the inner world. And subject and object are metaphors of the two worlds. So the subject is in here. It says, I am. That's the subject. Every one of us can say, I am, right? You say, I am. And all of that is that. It's that stuff out there. So that's the object, subject and object. And this is the way, this is the construction of the world. There's a subject and object. And the comment, consciousness has the extraordinary capacity of interiority. It can look within itself. Since it also naturally looks outward, it creates two worlds. So we naturally look out, we look outside, we look around us, we try to figure everything out. We're told that we have to do certain things, but at a certain stage we discover we have an inner world too, and we learn to look inside of ourselves. It's very, very critical and crucial that we all become aware and familiar with our inner world. Because it's the quality of the inner world that makes us happy or miserable. And if we learn the secrets of the inner world, we learn the secrets of happiness. And we can do that through meditation and through inner work. Should I do one more?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you rather have... Oh, I'll do this one. The structure of reality. This is very subtle. You going to listen? Huh? You seem very smart to me, all of you. Extremely smart. I'm overestimating how smart you are. So, okay. So the first statement is, whatever happens in your life, the structure of reality remains the same. What is the structure of reality? This thing I've been talking about, the subject and the object. Whatever happens, whether you're a loser or a winner, you're always a subject and an object. The Purusha and Prakriti, they say. Baba called it the field and the knower of the field. The field is our reality and the knower of the field, that's us. And it's constant. Whether you win or lose, you succeed or fail, there's always this structure. Me and the rest of it. And then our minds are telling us stories about it. It's impossible to control or manipulate your prakriti, your external world, so that you always win or succeed. Have you noticed that? You can't get the world to totally agree with you. The world doesn't give a shit. You're one little being in a vastness, and you want the whole universe to go so that you are triumphant, to become Taylor Swift. It's only one of that. And that won't be forever either. So you can't get, you can't make the universe bow to your will. So there's another way, and that way is demonstrated by the great sages, by the great yogis, by Bhagwan Nityananda. So one must be relaxed and blissful, whatever arises in the field. Because the structure of reality is always the same, we have to learn to accept however it is. And this is Bhagwan Nityananda's secret. That's why he's such an extraordinary, compelling figure. He is relaxed and contented amidst all that arises and disappears. Imagine that. If you stopped worrying every minute about this is good for me, this is bad for me, this is good for me, this is bad for me, oh my God, oh yes, oh, blah, blah, blah. And all the tension, all the energy you spend, instead you just looked at your life and you were content. You were present to it, you let it unfold. This is Bhagwan Nityananda, this is what he was. He was a man who sat there and he let life unfold and he stayed in a blissful and peaceful state. He is the image of the right relationship of the field and its knower. So you'd be wearing a loincloth. Relaxed, surrendered, and contented. You don't have to wear a loincloth, but imagine yourself, this is a little meditation. Imagine yourself completely relaxed, completely surrendered to whatever happens, and completely contented. Just in this moment, just get in touch with what that would be. I know we're very far from that person. And yet that place is there within each one of us. Just sit contentedly, surrendered. No manipulation of what happens. We don't have to worry, push and pull. And remember, the structure of reality never changes. Whether you win, lose, or draw, the structure of reality is always the same. So let's contemplate that now for a minute. And for a minute, become that part of you that is peaceful, contented, surrendered, and joyous. Not after this thing or that thing happens, but right now in the life as it is, sit with acceptance and contentment. I often tell that Baba told me once, be content with what you have. And that one single line has resonated for me for so many years. And I realized when he said that contentment was not a condition that happens to me after I get everything I want, but contentment was a place inside me that always existed and that I could get in touch with. It had nothing to do with anything happening externally. And it was a very important realization for me. So my effort then, while I tried to do certain things externally, of course, I always was trying to be in touch with that place of contentment. So just for a moment, touch the place of contentment that's within each of us. Within each of us, at the source of our minds, the place of contentment, the clear space of good feeling. This is you at your best, and if you can touch that place and touch it again and again and again and eventually come to live in that place, then you're one with Shiva, then you're one with consciousness, and then presto, magico, you're happy, and your life works. So it's always good to continually turn within to that. So in honor of Shivaratri, we're going to be chanting Om Namah Shivaya. And we'll chant that for a few minutes, and then we'll meditate for 10 minutes. And in meditation, try to get in touch with that Shiva inside, that place of contentment and joy and peace. It exists within everyone. The startling thing that my guru told me when I first met him, was that this place exists within every one of us. None of us, it was not left out of anybody. A lot of times we feel, oh, I don't have that skill, I don't have that ability, I don't have that power, I'm not smart enough, I'm not this enough, strong enough, whatever it is. But the sages say that this place of contentment and joy and love is within every one of us. It has not been left out of anybody. And if we make a little bit of effort inwardly, turning within, we can touch that place. So in honor of Shivaratri, let's do that. We're going to chant the mantra, Om Namah Shivaya. Every time we chant, we get 10,000 credit for 10,000. You can check your bank account in the morning, a subtle bank account. And then we'll do that for a few minutes, and then we'll meditate for 10 minutes. And once again, with great love and respect in honor of the great festival of Shivaratri, I welcome you all with all my heart. Satyanath Maharaj Ki Jai. Let's chant.
Yeah.
See you next time. Yep. And
with love and respect, I invoke him with the slogan, so I'm open to connect with devotion, cause I know that he's always in effect. In deep meditation with a snake around his neck, he's the husband of poverty, Mahashakti. He rides a white bull, the vehicle Nandi. He's gonna put his father, Mr. Mahadev, and the Ganges flow down from the crown of his head. A crescent will rest right next to his dreads. He's the god of all beings,
covered in ash,
with a smile on his face. His compassion is vast, living in a place called
Mount Kailash.
Is his home in the shape of a lingam. He's a rolling stone to the king of all yogis, Shiva Shambho, singing on the Mashivaya.
Shivaya Namah Om.
Shivaya Om Namah Shivaya. 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 Shiva Shankar, the yoga master, known as Nataraj, the cosmic dancer, Lord of destruction, Lord of disaster. If you don't invite him, he's a party crasher. He's an old school mystic who's soon dualistic. He guides my mind so I can shift it away from a place that's materialistic to a space that's more holistic. Oh great Shiva, you make my soul shine. Awaken the snake at the base of my spine. Third eye wide open in a yoga pose. Shows the side of focus as lotus unfolds. Deep concentration with breath control. Turning to the source, you can feel the force flow. Shakti meets Shiva, it all becomes whole. Singing.
Namah Shivaya, Shivaya Namah Om. Om Namah Shivaya. As the flames get higher, as the corpse get burned on the funeral pyre. The soul never dies, so it won't expire. When it's time to die, just take off this attire. Exhale to let go of the ego's desire. Let your soul be inspired to shine even brighter. Shiva Nataraj, the one I admire. Dancing on a demon in a burning ring of fire. Mahadev, it's been said that your pure spaciousness, you're known as truth, consciousness and bliss, creating, devastating and always transforming. You save the whole world when you swallowed up the poison, destroying bad habits, ignorance and greed. Practice detachment, compassion and peace to the king of all yogis. We offer these prayers to the Lord of Meditation in the Himalayas.
Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Namah
Nityanandaya.